Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Good morning, team. Welcome back. Lovely to have you all again. So today I've got something a little bit different, but very special for you. It's our first ever returning guest to the podcast. And I mean, what a man to have back. We last spoke to him in June 2020. And since then, he's a World Cup winner, a Sevens Series winner, and a two-time Australian Sean McKay Sevens Player of the Year. It is, of course, the one, the only Mr. Henry Hutchinson. Now occupying the role of vice-captain of Australian Sevens, the man is shot to the top. And is now considered one of the best in the game. What a man this bloke is. And so we hope you guys enjoy this. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode. And we'll see you guys soon. Cheers. Thanks for joining this morning, Henry. How are you?
Good, Freddie. I've just finished off the season. Had a 10-day little break in New York, which was good. It was a lot, but back home in Sydney now. Got a week before we're starting back training, so I'll put the feet up, that's for sure.
We were just talking how, I mean, for those of you who've been listening to the podcast for a while, it's been over 2 years, which seems ridiculous since we last spoke. But I mean, what a 2 years you've had, sort of a rollercoaster of emotions.
It has. Someone pumped the brakes on time. That did go quickly, but it's been polar opposites, really. The end of the 2021 season to the 2022 season's vastly different.
Let's start in the current. We can always work backwards. So obviously this season was, you guys are now number 1 in the world. What a season you had.
Yeah, it was something. It was definitely, well, it was the best season I've ever had, but also the Australian Sevens team's ever had as well in history. So I know the team's happy. Rugby Australia is happy. There's still obviously room to improve, but you know, we really just looked ourselves in the mirror and said, "Look, if we want to get better and get the funding or respect we want or we think we deserve, we've got to start winning or we've got to start performing consistently." And that was our big line, big kind of key that we're trying to focus on, was our consistency, being a top 4 team every tournament, and I think we did that well this year.
And obviously, so when we first spoke to you, you were sort of just broken into the team, sort of one and a half seasons into playing Sevens. Now, are you one of the more established members? Do you see yourself sort of someone that some of the younger players coming through can look up to? Or do you still see yourself?
Yeah. No, definitely. So I played Sevens before Rebels and then I went back to Sevens. So I was kind of like coming back into my second stint. I definitely have taken on more of a leading role, vice captain of the team at the moment. So, you know, we've got Nick Maloof, who is captain, and he does a great job. He's a great leader, but he missed a few tournaments this year. So I was lucky enough to captain the side and just kind of dip my toe in the water. I think I did a few things okay, a few things not so well. I'm enjoying the role and it brings extra responsibility, but I like that.
Talk to us about that then. So, what did you do not so well? What did you do so well? How did you find it?
I loved, you know, I was pretty cruisy captain, right? Like, but I love chatting to the boys. I just kind of liked speaking to them before they go out. You know, I love the jersey. It's my passion. It's my why. It's why I get up in the morning is playing for the team. So, you know, I was able to show the boys my passion and my love for the jersey by talking before they left. And I think they responded well to that. And I guess, you know, after the 3 weeks in Spain on the last night out, you know, I forgot about my captaincy duties.
No, that sounds, and so that's obviously the highest honour you could sort of be looking towards. But obviously Nick is a little bit older than you, isn't he? So is that something you see long-term, as in you think you are the natural replacement?
Oh, maybe. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of great leaders and great blokes that roll through the squad. So, you know, nothing's ever for certain or given to you. I'll just, you know, focus on being picked every tournament and constantly playing. And if my leadership abilities come naturally and the coach thinks I'm the next fit, then so be it. And if not, I respect that decision because the team always comes first.
And obviously, so as we said, you world champions, that was back in August. Talk to us a little bit about that sort of, being crowned world champions in the days after. Obviously, it must have been quite a fun time to be a part of that squad and just sort of, yeah, be a world champion.
Yeah, mate. LA was unreal. So it was a very tight tussle for the championship spot going into the last tournament of the year. So South Africa were probably definitely the favourites. We could win it. Argentina could win it and Fiji could win it. So it was all, there's like this big maths equation you could write out on the out on the whiteboard. Matt Damon style and try and figure it out. But all we knew is like we had to be in the top three, you know, and ideally we had to win it. But if things went our way, we had to get top three. And, you know, South Africa, unfortunately for them, fell apart a little bit and we got our shot. We knew, make that top three game and win that last game we did. So the pressure was on, but we managed to get there. And you know, it was a special moment. I had my sister in the crowd there, actually. She was there. So it was great to spend that and experience that with her. But yeah, the night they came was good. It was good fun in LA. We had Mr. LA and the team, Billy Meeks, so he kind of knew the spots where to go.
Yeah, no, he must be a useful man to have around there. But he seems like he's set
definitely
very well over there. Then sort of moving backwards a bit, obviously the other big thing that happens is for you since we last spoke was the Olympics, which we know we talked to you about Rio already, but Tokyo also didn't go to plan for the Aussies. But talk us through a little bit about the process of just before your expectations, just what sort of went wrong.
Yeah, I've had a lot of time to reflect on it. It was very disappointing. We came seventh. But maybe at that time, they look back at it, maybe that's what we deserved. I don't know. I definitely do feel like the team right now is different. There's a different hunger in the team. There's a different vibe in the team. And I feel like it's very different. Leading into Tokyo was also difficult with no one knew what was going on with contracts and the future of the game. But I guess a lot of teams are in the same boat. And we just stuffed up that first game against Argentina. And, you know, sevens is a very, very unforgiving sport. And once you lose one game, you're on the back foot. It's hard to get back in.
And then so sort of the Olympics itself, though, was that just as good as Rio? Because, I mean, all the reports from Tokyo, it was still incredible.
Yeah, it was different, though. Like, it was still very special. Like, you're still in a village. Like, a city builds. It's like a little bubble life where you just kind of, you're hanging out with all these different athletes, but COVID did dominate it. So you weren't allowed to leave the village, only to train. Obviously the country, well, the city was in a state of an emergency. So there was no one on the streets. It was just dead quiet. And there's a lot of restrictions across the villages, in the village across the country, sorry. Each country had different kind of rules about what their athletes could do. And the Australian house set up a fantastic house. It was so welcoming. They had baristas there. They had a lot of the internal people did so well to make it feel as vibey as possible. But there was also strong restrictions on us not, I guess, mixing with other countries. So it was a bit sterile, but that's just kind of the way the world was at that time.
And so in the aftermath of the Olympics, what was sort of the teams, the setups, what was sort of the approach? Like, how are we going to change this? Obviously, it didn't go to plan, but like, fresh start, just go again? Or were there any big changes?
Yeah. So, but obviously, the women's and men's program didn't perform to what Rugby Australia expected. And there's a big review, of course, and a season. And then after the review, the season kind of just started, and both the men's and women's program went to Dubai, and we played in Dubai with a like there was a change in attitude, but it was still very similar kind of structurally. It was the same. And then start of the new year, coaches swapped. So Tim Walsh, our coach at the time, went to the women's, back to the women's program. And John Menenti, who at the time was a women's coach, came across to us. And look, change is always pretty scary at the start. And everyone's like, oh, what's going on? It's so weird. Because obviously the men's and the women's program, we train at the same headquarters, same field, so you see a lot of each other. But the women's program's done really well this year. They won the World Series, World Cup, Comm Games, and we've won the World Series, best and most successful season we've ever had. So, you know, maybe Rugby Australia, we're looking at through a glass ball and made the right decision.
I mean, do you have any insight into what the thinking behind that was? Because, I mean, what most people would tend to think is if you've had an absolute shocker, you'd clear out, get a new coach in from outside to have a new perspective. If you guys have, if the coaches both sort of been in and around, surely the actual things can't change that much.
Yeah, look, no, we weren't really, the players weren't really
told anything
involved, I guess, with the process. I guess with Tim, he had success with the women before, winning gold in Rio. So there was that. And then I guess, I think with Johnny, they could see the way he coached and the style he had with James Stannard, Chuck, an old player, they're paired up together, and how that might positively affect us and might work well with us. And they made the right decision there, because we're loving playing under Johnny and Chucky. They're doing a great job. And I think they've signed on to the next Olympics.
That's good. And so obviously we're now sort of back in current day. We've already talked a little bit about the future, but for you personally, what sort of like the next step for you? Obviously big season coming up. I think 11 or 13 tournaments. I can't remember what you said.
11 tournaments. It's a big season because it's an Olympic qualifying season. So top four teams automatically qualify. And if you don't make it, then you got to go through your region. And obviously the Australasia region is pretty strong. Oceania region, you've got Fiji, New Zealand, Australia, Samoa. You know, arguably four of the five best teams in the world at the moment. Hopefully we'll all qualify automatically. But you never know. So, you know, our goal next season is to just get in the top four. Well, no, obviously to win, but like secure a top four. Yeah, secure the top four automatic qualification. And then once that's done, we then look to the Olympics. So I think the group that we've got now, we're all pretty focused on going to the next Olympics. So I know, you know, everyone's on different contracts and different timelines, but it'd be great to keep the squad together. I think that's been the difficulties of success in the past, because players just go on and it's just kind of a revolving door. If we can keep the spine and the talent together, who knows?
And on a personal level, is that you're just trying to contribute to the team? Are there any personal set goals that you've got for yourself?
Oh, no, I just contribute, keep playing well. I've signed on to the next Olympics. So, you know, my goal is just to lead the team in whatever way possible and capacity as much as I can to the Olympics, and just keep improving, try and be as best as I can. And I don't know, hopefully we can pick up a few medals along the way.
Nice. And obviously last season, on a personal note, you were obviously, all your contributions were highlighted. Was it 2021 where you won the Sean McKay Sevens Player of the Year?
Yeah, 2020 and 2021. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Two time.
It kind of mixes over, but yeah.
But I mean, that must be nice to have all your sort of hard work sort of recognised and awarded for it.
Definitely. Like, of course, it's a great feeling getting recognised, but especially from your teammates. You know, you don't do it for awards. You know, you do it for success as a team. You do it for the memories. You do it for a good life. And, you know, you do it for your country. But, you know, when you pick up a few awards along the way, it's great. It's great to be recognised. Like I said, I love playing for the team. It's so much fun. And I hope to do it for a little bit longer and continue the good form we're having.
Your awards cabinet at home must be getting pretty full with medals and a couple of trophies in there.
Not full enough. We can't get too ahead of ourselves, you know. Like, we're just focusing on staying consistently at the top, there or thereabouts. You know, you look at the Fijis, the South Africas, the New Zealands, you know, they've done this for years. Always been those top three. Yeah. So if we can be up there with them all the time, that's where we want to be.
You're 25. You've got a lot more time to win a few more medals, hopefully a few more trophies.
Yeah, 25. I feel a bit longer. I think I feel a bit older. God. Rocket Rod Davies came to the program a few years ago. And he was a bit older when he did. And he was just shocked at all the running. And he was getting so sore. And he said to me, sevens is like dog years. You do one season in sevens and it's like having 7 years on your career. So I feel older than 25, but it's still 25. But yeah, if a body can keep going, I'd love to.
So you said that Nick had been out with injuries last season. Is that something that your findings become more and more like congruent with the game? That because it's becoming so intense and so many matching play, people are starting to pick up more injuries?
Yeah, look, the intensity and the physicality of the game's just every year getting more and more. Like, it's very noticeable, especially some of the changings of like how they referee the game. It's definitely rewarding powerful teams more than like maybe super fast teams these days. So, you know, it's a physical game. You know, I think 10 years ago, sevens is a bit like touch. It's definitely not like touch. The body gets sorer. So I've got to be a little bit more careful, stay a little bit more prepared on top of my body. So, you know, I don't, you know, blow a gasket or, you know, making sure I'm recovering as much as I can between games or between weekends. But that's something I've done pretty religiously my whole career. And if you do that religiously early on, I think it will pay dividends later in your career.
Yeah, you've been fairly lucky with injury, haven't you? You haven't really had that big one which can set you out.
Touch wood. No, I broke my finger. That's probably the only bad one. And a broken finger and a hammy. But I'm too flexible, I reckon. I did gymnastics growing up, and it's gotten me out of a bit of trouble, I think.
I mean, obviously the other big thing with Australian rugby recently, I'm sure you watched it from when you're over in America, was the 15s on the weekend with that big call. What was your take on that, if you're allowed to say?
Oh, obviously ridiculous. That was tough, you know. The boys played so well, and the Wallabies, you can see it, like the style they're playing. I think Rennie's got to be playing a really good game. And you can see that they care so much, and it's so good to see blokes like Bernard and Kirtley and those guys come back to Australia at this age. And I think, you know, they're giving so much to the squad and to the younger players to learn off players with such experience. You know, they deserve to win that game, and that gets taken away from them, and it just changes the Bledisloe. And it just, you know, now on paper it looks bad. But, you know, they were so close, and, you know, very frustrating to watch. I was hurting.
But correct decision or wrong decision?
Wrong decision.
Yeah? Not 9-9?
Yeah, definitely. No. Every player does that. Every 10 slows the game down at the back end, you know, kicking the ball out. That's just the style it is.
I think I agree with the fact that it probably happened all game, but it only picked up on it because it was the last minute. But
maybe.
It was, what, 39 seconds, so...
Well, I'm back in Burnett all days, my boy.
As you should. But yeah, the 15s program for Australia looks very healthy going into the World Cup. So confident, like, they should come away well.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, you don't want to be peaking too early. We all know there's one country that does that every year. But yeah, I think the boys are going in the right direction. You know, I'm not in and around the squad, but I know a lot of the players and obviously watch them all the time. So. I think they're playing really well. I think a lot of the young players are stepping up and they're getting a few more caps under their belts to get a bit more experience. So another year before the World Cup, they'll be strong.
Is there much sort of communication or integration between the sevens and the 15s programs, or are you guys pretty separate?
There is on like a personal level. Like there's a lot of, because obviously a lot of the boys have played with boys in super teams or growing up or, you know, just within Rugby Australia, but from a program point of view, not really. I think the last kind of 10 years, the game has just become so different. You know, like it was very easy 10, 15 years ago for a 15s player to just go to sevens, play for tournaments, and then go back, and then vice versa, a sevens player to just go to super, play a handful of super games or wallaby games or whatever it is, come back to sevens. But it's not that easy anymore. The sevens game is so niche, and it's a different style of football. It requires maybe a different athlete sometimes. And same with the 15s. So structurally, we have the same goals. We're run by the same group, the same program, same board and business. We want the same things. But from a training point of view, they're pretty separate.
And obviously the other big thing, sorry, sticking on 15s, I know that's not your special, but there's quite a lot of press about Nick White recently and sort of his influence. He's obviously come back into the Australian team, and some people love him, some people absolutely despise him. He's a bit like Marmite. Have you much run in with Nick before?
Yeah, I know Nick. Yeah. Nick's loved here in Australia. I did a pre-season now at the Brumbies when I was, would have been young, maybe 17. He was still down there. And he's a full-on character. He's full of energy. He's full of life. And the boys love him. You know, he's just a typical nine, you know, and you want him in your team and not on the other side. Yeah. So he's a lot. He's a great guy. And he's playing great footy.
Yeah, no, he is. Well, obviously, I'm down next to him. He was over here for a little bit, and he was loved just as much over here. It's interesting because there as well. I have been a few comments made about him. Looking forward to your current seventh season, like the next one coming up, who do you think are going to be the back up at the top? Do you think it is again going to be the Oceania sort of countries, or do you think South Africa and Argentina can maintain it? Because South Africa lost a few big players, and they're sort of looked like it could be heading towards a transition period.
Yeah, I think, look, you never write off South Africa. They've got so many good athletes, but they are going to have a transition period. I think they got a new coach coming through, two new coaches. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. Argies, yeah, they're so strong at the moment. They're keeping their squad tight. They've got their spine. They've got their players that have stayed for a while now. So they'll be trending in the same direction. I think Ireland's always good. They are going to lose a key player, Terry Kennedy. But they're just a good sevens team. They've got a good balance of, you know, X factor and hard workers and chiefs that are kind of running the show. So Ireland's. But then I also expect New Zealand to bounce back. Not that they were bad this season. It was just they came on a bit late. You know, they won the last tournament in LA. I think they were looking pretty strong at the World Cup as well. So New Zealand will be back to where they've always been. And then you've always got Fiji. It's a tight competition, right? There's a lot of good teams. France, bloody good. You know, any team can win on their day. The hardest thing about sevens is just staying consistent, getting in that top four every tournament.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. You come to any tournament, there will be an upset somewhere. There will be one of the 10, 14 teams who get a big win. Obviously, England's sevens program has taken a pretty abrupt turn the last few years with funding and everything like that. They're going to come back anytime soon, or at the moment
they're turning. So England, Scotland and Wales have been
GB.
Now they're GB, but England definitely lost all their players, like all their kind of players that have been around for so long. The Mitchells, the Bibbies, Glover,
Norton,
Carpenter, Burgess, you know, like these guys that were seasoned and who were very good sevens player. They either have retired or moved on or whatever. So they got this influx of just new players all at once. And takes time to learn the game. They're good footballers. They're just still learning sevens. When you got like 10 guys in a team learning sevens kind of all at one tournament, it's hard. But they're Scotland, Wales, England are going to be GB. That's going to be very helpful for GB when it comes an Olympic year. I think this next year could be a little bit difficult just trying to understand how it's going to work out, where they're going to be based, how it's going to fit. I don't really have any comms on it. I'm not too sure if the players have too much comms on it at the moment. But in the long run, that's just going to be – it's going to be good for them. It's going to be disappointing and sad not to play England, Scotland and Wales. They're such rugby nations, and they've been on the circuit for so long. So that's definitely disappointing as an opponent point of view. You love those games against England, you know. It'd be like Australia versus England. That's a great rivalry. So I'll miss that. But I'm interested to see how GB go. And I think it's going to be a a successful decision for them, the Olympic and Com game, Olympic and World Cup years.
Yeah, it's the, I mean, it's casualties of COVID, isn't it? Isn't that for that program? They just get gutted. But yeah, I think you're right. From everything that I've sort of read and heard, that is, it's going to be a sort of 4 or 5 year plan. But hopefully, in the long run, that the program does come out better of it and then get back up to where they were 3 or 4 years ago when they were one of the best.
Sam, I agree.
Cheers for the catch up. Nice to see you. And
you.
We wish you the best of luck again for this year. But hopefully, it won't be 2 and a bit years until we next speak to you.
Thanks, Freddie. Yeah,
always love having you on. Yeah, no, far too long. Always love having you on. So yeah, just keep in touch. I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Unreal. Thanks, Matt. We'll chat soon.
Cheers, mate.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with 2 young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.